Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 2016, believe it or not. The album is Alan Partridge, Knowing Me, Knowing You. The artist, of course, is Steve Coogan. Knowing me, Jason Klom. Knowing you, Colin Anderson. Thank you so much for being here. So here's the thing. You finally forced me to sit down and actually go back as far as you can go into Alan Partridge. So
right.
I'm excited about it. So just so everybody knows, yes, this is a legit vinyl episode, Record Store Day. This is a UK release, two sides of Alan Partridge. So it's episodes 2 and 6. Yes, episodes 2 and 6 of the BBC 4 radio show. So,
BBC Radio 4.
BBC,
radio show.
Thank you, yes. BBC, yes, thank you. Now, why did you pick this, besides the fact that you had to pick something vinyl?
I was really struggling to find something vinyl. Everything, all my comedy albums as a kid were VHS albums.
Yeah.
And so I'm still in the process of trying to torrent one of them, because I was like, oh, I've not listened to that for years, I should listen to it, and someone's uploaded it from VHS, and mm-hmm. I'm 2% remaining. This came up as a news story on a British comedy website, Chortle, which is sort of comedy nerd news.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, great, vinyl, it's something. It was 1991 or 92 that it came out.
Mm-hmm.
So it was something that I heard on the radio, was really into. Then I became a radio producer, so there's like a line between the two that I ended up working in the department that originally made this as a show.
Oh.
And still listening to it, it's like exciting and makes me want to work in that department.
Understandable. It's so, now, how common were these types of recordings at the time? Like, I mean, it's a live audience, so I was not expecting that, honestly.
Yeah, so the BBC still does a ton of that.
Yeah.
It's about an hour and a half a day on Radio 4, three different half-hour shows.
Mm-hmm.
At least one of those will probably be live audience, and they do comedy dramas and stand-up shows and comedy sketch shows and
good.
a ton of stuff. And so this would have been, I presume, 6:30 at night, which is like the prime time slot where they put things, but then they tell producers that people are going to be like driving the kids home or making dinner and not really paying attention.
Sure.
And so the laugh track is one of the things that they encourage, because it goes, comedy here, listen.
Sure.
So there was lots of this, and lots of kind of, this was a way that most great comedy writers in the UK come through radio comedy at some point, and this was just a particularly good batch under Amanda Iannucci.
Yeah, right. So who, I guess if, so we've got this. I guess more recently Veep is what maybe American watchers would know. I honestly had no idea he had a hand in this at all, because I think of him as more the political comedy, but then I also forget that he just loves
right.
comedy. Who was Steve Coogan before this to anybody?
He wasn't much before this.
I mean,
Alan Partridge was the thing that people got to know him as. Looking at the timeline, there was a series called On the Hour that was before this,
mm-hmm.
that Alan Partridge was a character on. They just had a sportscaster, and it was Alan Partridge, and Alan Partridge started to grow into like an actual character and not just a sports dude. And so that was the year before this as a radio series, like 6 episodes, done, end.
Yeah.
Everyone's finished, as is the British comedy way.
Sure.
And so then the next year they came out with Alan Partridge and kind of built that character up more fully and filled him with neuroses and bitterness. And
what do you think about their choice of these two episodes?
I think episode 2, so side A is really strong.
Mm-hmm.
I really that's an episode that when I think back to the series, that's what I remember. Episode 6, side B, a little bit like it's almost like the series has started to fade a bit. But both of them had great moments,
mm-hmm.
and kind of the character in different situations as well. As like, he opens up the first one and it's episode 2 and he's full of hope, and it's you know, we've we've had a review in the New Statesman, which I don't read, but he's kind of on the up. And then by the end, he's sort of thinking he might be cancelled. He's thinking he might go to TV, but is in no way sure that that's going to happen. And he's kind of pitching for the next gig. And then he kills someone.
Love it. I mean, that's... I guess I should have seen that coming, but I just love just that whole bit towards the end where he's he's just having a moment of silence and then just realizes he has to make some noise so people know the radio's still going. Holy shit.
That's magnificent.
And just I didn't know how they were going to justify
the credits
that
in a really solemn way.
And then it just at one point... This is BBC 4. Like, it's just so perfect.
It's amazing. And listening, like, being out here now and making radio for NPR, because Radio 4 is, like, the most NPR-ish kind of radio station in the UK. But some of, like, the language and the content, like, both episodes, there's pube talk.
That's true.
There. And you just think, and this is 6:30. This is, again, this is, like, people are making their dinner. And Amanda Iannucci's just going, well, they should be considering pubes in this situation.
So the first, episode is, like we said, is episode 2, and it's mostly him feeling inadequate against a 9-year-old boy. Like, that is, it's just 30 minutes of an inadequate feeling 37-year-old man. It's just, it's so sad, but, like, his bluster just keeps it going the whole time. He's just so desperate.
Right, and so much of the character's kind of about his cockiness and his, lack of self-awareness and not seeing how other people see him, and yet within like minutes he's back to just being the child whose shorts have been stolen and all the other kids are shouting smelly Alan Partridge at him. And it's just, and him saying I don't want to go back when the hypnotist's got him under and he's reliving his childhood, and then he's in his happy place and the headmaster's come into the room, and Alan Partridge has won the sports essay writing award, and so he's fully pumped up, and I'm Alan Partridge. And then they're saying, now you need to come back to reality, and he's like, I don't want to come back to reality. I don't want to go on the radio. The radio's for losers.
Yeah, it's just so, like, there is that, I just love that dark edge that also gets glossed over, like, just because, you know, jokes like smelly Alan Partridge, but it's also, like, really dark and, like, kind of sad, yet it's not, at any point, we don't dwell on that.
Yeah, I mean, his child voice that he's doing is just so, so pathetic.
Yeah. Did you hear all these in their original run?
I probably didn't hear them all, like, in order.
Sure.
Like, when I was 12, I'd like happen upon them, but then they've been repeated quite a bit since. There's a digital radio station called now 4 Extra that reruns kind of classic shows, and so I've heard it on a bunch of those things and clip shows and things, and yeah, a lot of it's very familiar, and then some of it's got recycled for the TV show as well.
Okay, I was wondering that, actually, because honestly, when I kept the stuff I kept finding it, because I'm not as familiar with the radio stuff, I'm like, is this the audio of this show? Because it's, you know, it sounds like
Alan Partridge isn't really a thing here, though, is he?
No.
I was trying to think. Like,
that's the hard part. Like,
he's in films now,
yeah,
to some extent,
yeah,
but he's not.
No,
he's sort of Alan Partridge-y, and like he wants to succeed in films, kind of hasn't.
I know, except for in an author. Was he nominated, or was it just Judi Dench was nominated? I didn't see the film.
Oh, from Philomena.
Yeah, which I really wanted to see. I mean, so that's some acknowledgement, but it's also this thing where he's so
talented.
Nobody knows him. Nobody knows his name. You know, you could say Steve Coogan a million times, and you're not gonna.
Yeah.
I just lucked into, you know, loving English stuff, and. I mean, they even changed the name of his movie over here.
Right.
Because the trailer was originally Alan Partridge,
Papa.
Alpha Papa, but now it's just Alan Partridge.
Right.
Because they don't want to confuse anybody.
That's fine.
It's fine, but it's just like, it's got this sort of like, but it's, even that is almost like presumptive that anybody would give a shit.
Yeah.
You know? I actually like the movie, though.
Yeah,
it was
like
so
it.
Ridiculous. But, boy. Thinking back to like early. What's the first comedy that you listened to or watched? But is there any stuff? Was there other radio stuff?
Other radio stuff. I had a box set of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, so that was coming an early week, just lost under the duvet, listening to back to back, turning cassettes over.
Yeah.
So that really stood out and kind of made you think what you could do with radio as well.
Yeah. When was that produced? Because the show was in late 70s, early 80s, right? The TV show, I mean?
Right. So the radio show was a little bit before that. Because then the TV show was a lot of the same cast.
Oh, really? Okay.
Minus my friend Jeffrey McGiven, who I've worked with a lot. Uh-huh. But he wasn't. He was Ford Prefect in the radio show and not in the TV show.
Okay. Wow.
But I did get to hear lots of stories about them making the radio show and
awesome.
Having to have the writer kind of sequestered in the studio finishing the scripts and things like that.
Shit,
which
really?
Is like, for something that seems so complicated as a show, it's like, oh god, you really want to have like had that script a week before, not hours before.
Right. I mean, was any of it live? I mean, is this what we're talking about with some of this, like, or was any of it, because that seems like it would be complicated.
Yeah, I don't think Hitchhikers was. They did a live tour of it as like the radio show, mm-hmm. like the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. They put the cast together. So they were doing it live.
Yeah.
I think it was recorded in like a theatre, but I don't think it was in front of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it was brilliantly written. I was listening to it again and it's just like every scene, it's like so quotable.
Yeah. I can imagine. I mean, that the one thing that I guess you get distracted by is as wonderful as it is to listen to anything Douglas Adams is involved in, like just the effects on the early show are just a little hard to get through sometimes.
Right.
You know, obviously.
Like the video effects.
Yeah.
So on the radio, that was fine.
Yeah.
Because it was like Delia Derbyshire crazy radiophonic workshop sounds.
Yeah.
But not like the first time we've had a go at doing video graphics.
Right. Yeah, that's why it's rough. So I can imagine, I'm going to have to seek those out because I think those would be a lot of fun. They sound like they're very involved. This, on the other hand, like it's so simple. It's just an audience and an interviewer, but it's not simple in terms of of writing.
And one of the things that hit you just in terms of like the production or, and this is like, I'm always wondering like how much your average listener hears this, but you can just hear the edits.
Yeah,
it was done on tape. You just hear like chop, audience laughter, chop.
Right.
Someone starts saying a word, chop, and it feels like crappily produced in some ways, but that's just because of the time, and that's what they were working off.
Yeah.
But then the scripting and the performances and everything else mean that you don't care.
Yeah. Now here's the other thing that I didn't get to do, because I just listened to them through about 1.5 times, so I didn't get to look at, because I'm not as familiar, and I know he names everybody in terms of like calling them producers or whatever,
right,
any of the actors. I'm not familiar, and usually I'm okay with this, but I'm not familiar with any of the other
actors.
Oh,
okay.
So
yeah, I mean, so Rebecca Front is probably the most famous, but probably in Britain, that she's in The Thick of It.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So
all
she's
right. There we are.
And it is also like currently in a bunch of like British TV and things. Like she's doing very well for herself. Who else? So Dean McKeachin was one of the other cast. She was playing the child genius.
Yeah.
I don't know what she's up to at the moment. David Schneider's doing a lot of script editing and developy things and TV, and he's and Patrick Marber became a playwright.
Oh, really? Okay.
And has made some wonderful, like, has written a couple of great books and did a few radio series as well, which were like wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely like Armando putting his gang together, and he's obviously kept working with Rebecca, and I'm sure David Schneider's popped up in other things in the development of this. I was reading, so this was more on the hour, Stuart Lee and Richard Herring were writers on it. So Stuart Lee's now pretty big name.
Yeah,
and Richard Herring's a big like podcaster, weirdly.
Oh, right. Yeah.
He's got a bunch of podcasts. He's one of the only people in the UK to find a way of like actually funding podcasts. He does his shows in a big theatre and so sells tickets. And
smart.
So it's and has now started doing Kickstarters and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But so they were this great double act. They had a great radio show when I was a teenager that was like sketches and things.
Mm-hmm.
And like with the exact same voice that they have today, which is
really
funny because they both sort of dropped off and weren't famous, and it was just like, remember when we were kids and we used to enjoy Lee and Herring? And then both of them kind of came back, and Stuart Lee's doing the comedy vehicle TV shows again and written these books, and Richard Herring is Richard Herringing about. He did a thing for International Women's Day, mm-hmm. and he does it every year where he just replies to everyone on Twitter that says, "But when's International Men's Day?" with just giving them the date. This is a factual service. And he started, because of the time difference, he started as I was going to bed. And I woke up and he was still doing it. He'd Holy been like shit. Like 12 hours or something.
Oh my
just
God.
Replying to people politely saying. And it's like so childish. And I was like, oh, that is the Richard Herring that That's I loved as like a kid.
Oh my God.
Commitment to just being a dick.
Oh, by the way, if you want some water, please feel free. The more you're talking about this, the more it's occurring to me like the minimal amount of comedy radio exposure I had as a kid, because the thing, like, if you living in America, you know, growing up here, you got Dr. Demento if you were on certain parts of the East Coast and most of the West Coast. That was your exposure. Like, he's going to give you comedy records,
right?
And I know there were a couple comedy channels. There was one called KMDY here for a very short period, but we didn't have like a committed group of people putting together, even, you know, NPR, maybe, what did they have? They had maybe Prairie Home Companion.
Right.
I didn't know about that till I was too old to, you know, think it was cool. And I was like, oh, that's dumb. Which I've since come to appreciate it at least, but whatever. We didn't have this kind of commitment. What do you think the difference is? Is it just a history of it? Like,
yeah, it just never stopped in the UK. So it's now when like This American Life tries to do something that's like scripted on a stage, it's very, it is like Prairie Home Companion. It is like this semi-ironic, like, isn't this an old-fashioned thing to do?
Yeah.
And it never got to a point where it felt that old-fashioned in the UK.
Yeah.
And also, because it was such an opportunity for writers, like, you could get your radio, you could get, like, a series commission on the radio straight out of university. The producers were generally producers that came straight out of university.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was Armando's probably first
so
job.
Cool.
And so you had these really interesting people creating stuff, and there's like an 11 o'clock at night slot that is often a bit more weird and wonderful.
Okay.
Chris Morris had this amazing show, Blue Jam, which was on at like 3 a.m. and basically wasn't advertised, so the only way you found it was if you were coming down from something or or an insomniac, and then this weird shit would come on the radio where it's just like spooky loops and really, really dark monologues.
Oh my God, that guy's a living mindfuck, isn't he? That is what he does. Holy shit. Wow. That's so good. I mean, even going back, because I was trying to think of what could we compare to, like, the Goons, and there isn't anything. Like, we didn't have anything at the time, even. That's the 50s.
Yeah.
Like, I just interviewed Phil Proctor from the Fireside Theater, and, like, their influence, like, it skips, like, 10 years. Because, like, oh, I was listening to, you know, fuck, whatever the 40s were.
Yeah.
Skips
like
10
Jack
years.
Benny and
yeah.
Whatever.
And then we've got to import our radio from the Goons. I don't know where he was even hearing the Goons, but yeah. So the English carried on the tradition before, and I don't know why we stopped. I don't know. Again, maybe we were so obsessed with TV, but
yeah. I mean, it was sort of expensive radio.
Sure.
So, and I guess NPR's not that old either, is it?
I don't know.
I guess for NPR to be
that,
I think it was like the 60s that NPR was founded, and it was founded on this very like news public service. So so like comedy would be a little bit dirty.
Right. Yeah, and I guess so. Like, the closest, I mean, actually, oddly enough, like, the TV version of NPR, PBS, is, like, the only place you could get English comedy growing up, too. Like, that's where everybody here learned about Monty Python. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
That we learned about, like, Are You Being Served and stuff. But yeah, Monty Python
weird,
was
the
there.
Stuff that comes
I know,
through.
Isn't it? That and Keeping Up Appearances. When I was a kid,
Benny
I thought
Hill.
Were the greatest... Yes, I thought were the greatest things in the world because I didn't know better. And I'm like, oh, they're English and my mom's laughing. This should be great. Monty Python might be the one that stuck.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You had a choice to make.
Yeah.
And you took the right path.
I recently heard they might be rebooting Are You Being Served?
Yeah, they are. They're
rebooting
really
legitimately
every fucking thing.
Oh,
it's so depressing.
Oh, that's strange. I mean,
yeah. Well, they're rebooting. They rebooted for the radio Hancock's Half Hour. My friend's been making that, and it's wonderful. The scripts are so beautifully written.
Mm-hmm. What is that show? I don't know anything about it.
Oh, this was one that I was looking for the vinyl for.
Oh, okay.
So that I could do it for this. So it was Tony Hancock, and it was like an early sitcom.
Oh, okay.
When would it be? Like 50s, 60s?
Okay.
It was sort of post-war, I guess. People had done national service and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a group of friends doing a sitcom. He was Tony, and he was kind of it was slightly self-referential. I think like he refers to if he's working in the house, mm-hmm. he's like working on the show.
Okay, all right.
And so that kind of comes back round. But there's the one that I was going to pick for this is they do a show about Sundays just being dead and boring, mm-hmm. you know, when everything was just closed on
sure,
a Sunday.
Sure.
And so it's a half hour of them just going, I'm so bored. Which is like,
I love
like
it.
Seinfeld.
Yeah, it's yeah, like, yeah, 100%. Like, in the 60s?
So it's such an edgy thing to do. And then it went on to be like a TV show for a bit. And,
uh-huh.
And now it's being rebooted and they've done it a radio show again. And wow. I think doing a TV reboot too.
Aye, sir, to be honest, as this world goes, is to be one man picked out of 10,000.
That's very worthy of Shakespeare, that. Very good.
It is Shakespeare.
Well, it's better than that. It's worthy of the great bard.
Have you ever seen Hamlet?
Simon,
yes,
that,
yes.
Please.
I saw it with Alan Rickman. Who did you see it with?
My wife, Carol.
No. Who's playing the lead?
Hamlet.
Oh, yes, the great actor Bert Hamlet.
Simon,
no, which actor
on,
was playing the
now.
Lead? Yes?
Bernard Cribbins. Well, I don't know. It was a long time ago. It was before you were born. You wouldn't remember it.
Have you seen Citizen Kane?
Yes, I've watched every episode. Power to the people.
Yeah. Have you seen Beauty and the Beast?
Yes.
John Cocteau's?
No.
Have you read Metamorphosis?
Yes.
Who's it by?
No, I haven't read it.
Have you read any Dickens?
No.
Do you go to the bank?
No.
Can you play chess?
No.
Do you know any Russian?
No. What about you?
I'll
you.
Anything.
Right. You. Have you got any pubic hair?
No, I haven't, because I'm nine.
No, I'm 37 and I've got plenty. All right? Can you do this?
No, because my voice hasn't
exactly.
Broken.
Don't forget it. One more. Are you a boy or a girl?
I'm a boy.
Really?
My name's Simon.
Really? It could be Simone. Could be Simone, because you sound like a girl.
I'm a boy and my name is Simon.
Yeah. You've got something on your shoulder there.
Oh, no, you've gone too far.
You really
apologize.
Have to be
no
an
one hears my
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done it. I shouldn't have done it. I'm sorry.
It's
my mistake. I'm not very good with kids. It's Carol's. I've got a bad temper. But you are a little shit. That said, thank you for coming on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, the Fishers.
See, this is, again, it's the kind of innovation, and, like, I call it innovation, but it just sounds like it's just because it was still there.
Right.
There's no reason to stop.
Yeah.
People were paying attention.
Yeah, yeah. And there was a particular boom, I guess, in, like, the 50s, because there was a lot of these people seemed to be doing, like, gang shows during the war.
Okay.
There was a lot of those people kind of came back from the war and turned their shows into radio things.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that. Let's go back to this so that I'm very good at derailing. So, so when you first hear Alan Partridge, like what's your young brain doing? Like, was it like something big for you, or was it just like, this is another funny thing the BBC gave me?
it's difficult because it's now like, it's such a catchphrasey thing.
Yeah.
And because the TV show then grew out of it, and then there's been like an Alan Partridge TV show on and off every two or three years,
mm-hmm.
to like it's still going now as Mid Morning Matters, where they're making it online.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like Alan Partridge is a big part of British life, I think.
I guess so, huh? All right, that makes sense.
Like people definitely know the lines and know the character. And it's because it's such a British character as well. Like mm-hmm. It's like when they made The American Office, and
yeah.
you hear about the conversations they had about David Brent just being irredeemable and like, he's such a loser. Why can't we make him a winner? And in some ways, like America wants to like look up to its comedy characters.
Right, right.
Or certainly if it's NBC and it's Thursday
certainly.
Night and whatever. But what Britain wants is just a real loser, just someone that you can just go, what a prick. I hope it all fails for him.
Right, right.
But at the same time, go, that's me. Like, it's very
sure.
relatable. Everything
sure.
that Alan Partridge, he just wants to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll do things that we'd all go, could I, maybe I should just, no one would know.
Right.
Like, he'll do the venal, horrible stuff that we're all like, oh, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get this catharsis of just laughing at it going horribly wrong for him and him being found out. And partly the other thing is that this Alan Partridge-y, like we don't like people. It's everyone says like British comedy always comes down to class, but it's also like he has ambitions, and we're like, don't have ambitions.
Right.
Yep. Don't be a cock. You know your place. Yeah. This is you do your job, and don't draw attention to yourself. It's like a thing that parents will say to children.
Yeah.
And here's Alan Partridge drawing attention to himself, going, "Look at me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the man. I know what's right and what's cool," and just failing every time.
That must be our problem with it. Our problem is that we are told we can do whatever the fuck we want. Stand out as much as you possibly can. That man can't be... He's making some mistakes, Colin. He's right. A good guy deep down.
Yeah.
We can't accept that, no, sometimes you're just a fuck-up. At least in terms of characters, it's okay. Like, in life, find all the redeemable qualities you want for somebody. But the whole point of drama or comedy is, like, give me an extreme that I can pick up. You know what I mean?
I think Alan Partridge's, like, open ambition... And self-regard is the equivalent of teenagers having sex in a horror film. It's just like, you're going to get taken down.
It's so true. And my first thought, too, was like, well, not my first, but one of my thoughts was like, oh, yeah, this is clearly a precursor to David Brent. I kind of get, I'm getting a better handle on it.
Inheritor to John Cleese in Fawlty Towers.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Pompous.
Yeah. God. There are a few things, too, in terms of, like, region. Like, I want to know what might I be missing in terms of the fact that he's from Norwich, and that seems to be a punchline.
Right. Yeah, I was listening because Steve Coogan's from the Northwest. He's from Manchester.
Okay.
And I think when he's talking about Tyndall Hill when he's having his flashback, I think the character is from Manchester.
Okay.
But that he ends up in Norwich as like, Norwich is like a sad... provincial, like, you've not made it in London.
Yeah.
You've not made it in Manchester if you're in Norwich.
Right. Okay.
But you can be like the biggest fish in Norwich.
Sure. Okay. That makes
sense.
So
I think that's what they're going for. And it's sort of, I mean, it's not home counties, which are like the counties around London where it's like people have got money and they'll probably commute and work in London.
Sure.
Norwich is like another ring out from that.
Okay.
So it's removed from where the culturally important stuff happens.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, so I wasn't totally off. That was generally the impression I've always gotten was that, you know, he takes so much pride in this thing that he probably doesn't need to. And I mean, that's the funny thing, too, is you said you're talking about like some of the worst shit, so the stuff that you're relating to. Me as an American, I think I'm relating to it in this different way where I'm like, oh, fuck, am I that guy? And I get worried. I get like, he makes me panic. That's the two different reactions where you're like, well, like you might learn the lesson easier than I would, like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like when the child prodigy's just correcting his grammar and whom and just every little, like, you hate that kid so quickly.
Yeah,
and like I wouldn't hit the kid.
Yeah,
but when Alan Partridge says when he corners him and the kid's like, just say it, Alan. You want to push me in a canal. All right. I, Alan Partridge, want to push you in a deep, disused canal.
Disused canal. That's
what it's like, yeah, I'm glad he said that. I would want to say that.
Yeah. And then he just goes the step further.
And then he hits him.
He just fucking hits him. It's so horrible. Oh, my God. Like, now, these are the only two I listened to in terms of preparation for this. Is that... It sounds like this is the template that they all kind of...
Yeah, made. Yeah. I mean, I should have looked through and reminded myself of some of the other kind of episode storylines. But yeah, I mean, it's just him variously thinking that he's better than the guests or thinking that the guests are trying to be cool when they shouldn't be trying to be cool or that he's as cool as, even though he's definitely not. Oh, one of the other parallels I was thinking about is someone was saying that he's like his style and his fashion or whatever progressed, but it progressed to the point like the zenith of it was someone said it was like 2005 Top Gear host, and it's Jeremy Clarkson Top Gear. Anyone that knows Top Gear, I think there's a template for who Alan Partridge is. Oh, God, it's like that's so slightly true. Right wing, slightly yeah. like thrusting his crotch forward and slightly too tight jeans, wearing a leather jacket that he's not really able to carry off.
Yeah. That's the other thing too, is just like I love just that he's get the sort of like what happened? Is it in the second one? No, it's the first. Whichever one the attorney, the lawyer's on.
Right, that's the first one.
Sorry, yeah. And just how he's assuming he's gay, and he's just like, he goes in this whole rip, this whole homophobic rip, that is just like, oh God. And he just gets called out for it, which I found, like, what year, 92?
Yeah, 92.
I mean, obviously, the way it's designed, the way it's written, there's a period in English and American history where the homophobia would have been enough as of a right. joke. Like, they're just like, let's make fun of gays. But
it's Alan's homophobia that's the joke. And this guy's saying, I'm bisexual. And he was like, well, but it's the thing with the guys that we're really talking about, isn't it?
And then the best part then, of course, is like, so I suppose if I were in prison, they'd soap up my back and we kiss tenderly. And there's just like, oh, it escalates.
That's his line. Bisexual, don't pussyfoot around the point. It's the blokes that are involved.
That's right. Oh, it's so good. I mean, it's very simple. I feel like the format's really simple.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's really layered.
And it's too. Like three guests, so mm-hmm. it's like very in that way, it feels like very sort of UCB style
sure.
content. Yeah. It's going, okay, here's the thing, here's the host. What three people can we confront him with this
yeah,
week?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the first episode, side A, ties those together more successfully than the,
okay.
the other side as well. Like,
right.
you've got them chipping in throughout mm-hmm. and him saying, like, you shouldn't be talking about your sexuality in front of a child. Well, I'd cover his ears, but you just hit him.
Right.
So the kind of callbacks and things there work really well in that episode too.
Yeah, that's what's great too. Like you say, is it kind of builds because each person's clearly been in the back waiting and hearing all this bullshit going on.
Right.
Now they're willing to go on the air for some reason, but which they're all questionable too. They're all like, each of these people is kind of a douchebag in their
right.
own little way, but he's worse every
There's
time.
There's a bit where all the guests agree that the program is tawdry.
Yes.
Someone says it's a tawdry program. He goes, it's not a tawdry program, is it? And then like you hear three of them go, yes, I think it is. And then he goes, oh, is it?
So desperate to just be acknowledged and be with the group. There's so many things going on with this guy.
Right. But yeah, like it's a 6:30 show. It's like it's meant to be mainstream sort of prime time. It's really clear who everyone is.
Mm-hmm.
Like in some ways it's like swearier and dirtier than you'd get on the radio here, but this was like you'd sit around and listen to it with your family or
yeah.
like this is mainstream entertainment and
yeah.
it's like clear and effective because of it.
Yeah. Is this the kind of thing that you listen to on your own, or did you share it with your family? Was this family stuff?
You'd hear it in the car.
Yeah.
I can't remember specific examples. We definitely watched Alan Partridge. That was like
okay.
a safe thing to watch with your family, that there
sure.
wasn't going to be some sex unexpectedly
okay.
or
okay,
whatever.
Yeah. So, all right, so let's go back. I mean, radio is your thing now. What led to that? Was it like was it just British radio? Was there other stuff that led you to this interest in it? Were there comedy albums since we're on this podcast?
I mean, I didn't really have comedy albums. I had something uh-huh. that was like a vinyl release from a TV show that was probably quite racist called It Ain't Half Hot, Mum. Which was about like the British Army in India.
Oh, okay. Yes. All right. Yeah.
So I had that, but I was trying to think. I don't remember there being particularly jokes in that. I think it was just like army dudes singing
okay.
songs. But I mean, the TV show there were jokes, but on the album it was
on
just
album,
just
like
music.
Musical. Okay.
And then it was I had a few cassettes. So Lee and Herring, I had cassettes from there. Radio show.
Mm-hmm.
We had Radio One, which is like the youth music station, used to run comedy as well.
Okay.
So Armando did a bunch of stuff for that, and Yeah, there was lots of good comedians coming through, just getting their first, again, like students or graduates getting their first commission to make half-hour comedy shows.
Mm-hmm. Is that still typical? Like, you go right from school to radio, then is there the expected jump to TV, or is that not necessarily the
case? Yeah, it's not as clear. It used to be that was the only way you did it.
Okay.
And now YouTube and things like that mean that you can just make your own video. But there's still lots of people doing that. And there's still quite a lot of new commissions. And yeah, and I mean, the big thing for writers is that they still have a lot of open door sketch shows and things where anyone can just write a sketch and send it in.
Mm-hmm.
And if it gets used, you get paid and you get your writing credit on the radio. And that's exciting.
That's so good.
They've got like a couple of shows that do that are kind of running regularly.
Mm-hmm. God, that's amazing. There's nothing like that here.
Right. And there used to be, I remember there was a show called Weekending, which was like an end of week topical review show that everyone could send jokes in for.
Shoot.
And it was famously terrible. But as like a 14-year-old, I heard it and it was like, you're kind of expecting this NPR-y content and then you get something that's kind of irreverent and fun. And you're like, oh, this is exciting. And then when you get it happening really late at night, then you're like, oh, this is really special.
Yeah.
And it's Chris Morris.
right, of course. That's the other good thing is like, are there any like people who are big stars or at least big in your mind? Because, you know, every once in a while, obsessive, that you first heard on radio that have like blown up. I mean, obviously we're talking about Steve Coogan, but anybody else that you can think of that we might not have expected blew up from radio?
I mean, the exception is Ricky Gervais. Oh, I guess he had a radio show, but he did like music radio on commercial radio.
Okay.
He didn't do BBC writing stuff.
All right.
Before Little Britain had a great radio series.
See, I didn't know that. Okay.
But their TV stuff, I mostly felt like it sort of went downhill from series one, which I really liked series one, but it's just the repetition of the catchphrases got less interesting and the kind of puking and vomiting and whatever wasn't great. But the radio show was wonderful and smart and different and special.
See, the problem is I want to seek these out, but it's impossible over here.
Right.
The iPlayer does not work.
The radio iPlayer does.
It doesn't. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I know it used to, and then it stopped. If it started, but that was years ago that it stopped. Okay,
So Four Extra, if you kind of look for that online, has all the archives, and they've got some amazing,
that's awesome,
amazing stuff there. And they also do a lot of to pad out the archive. They'll do like interview shows with people that were involved in making them, or they do a comedy controller where someone comes in and picks four episodes of a thing.
Oh, okay.
And like curates a couple of hours of radio.
That's awesome.
So that's a good way of like finding your way around it.
Mm-hmm.
Who else came from radio? I don't know.
Pressure's on.
it's weird trying to work out like who's like knowing whether Steve Coogan's a thing here or not. Like he
isn't. No, I know. That's. I mean, well, you know, I know that Fry and Laurie also had a show for a long time too, which I still have not heard. Just bits and pieces.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Obviously,
I've seen
some
every
great
episode of the show, but I've never heard yet. That would have been around the same time, right? Just a little bit before this.
A little bit before. What was it? Fry's. No, that's Fry's English Delight. He did more recently. But it was like Stephen Fry's program. It wasn't even Fry and Laurie. It was Fry and Friends.
So it would have been him. It would have been. What's her name? Who's my mind has just gone blank. But either way, what about like as far as older stuff that you got exposed to that maybe you wouldn't have heard otherwise through the archives or through them repeating old, like how far back were they repeating stuff?
Oh, I mean they go right the way back. I mean, Goon Shows gets a lot of repeats.
Still, that's great.
Hancock gets a lot of repeats. There's stuff that's like the Navy Lark, which is just some dudes in the Navy having adventures.
All right.
When they launched this archive network, and one of my first gigs when I was a student was that I kind of blagged that I was a radio producer enough that they let me put like a CD sampler together for the sorts of things that they'd have on their network.
Okay.
And like suggested schedule and things like that.
Yeah.
So I listened to a bunch of stuff there. They actually had a radio version of Flywheel, Scheister and Flywheel, the Marx Brothers
thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay,
that was
really?
Pretty cool.
That's
and that was
awesome.
That was meant to be like lost in the archive, and all it took was me to like email the archive or probably go down to the archive and say, "Can you see if this is somewhere?" And then they had it.
Holy crap.
So yeah, that was pretty cool.
That's amazing. Is there anything like in terms of either modern radio or American radio, since you, I don't know how much American radio you're listening to, that you think is missing? Because, like, in terms of one, we're talking so much about radio just because, but, like, one of the things I miss in comedy albums is, like, really beautiful, like, soundscape production. Mm. I really miss that. It sounds to me like maybe that was the kind of thing that you were listening to in terms of Hitchhiker's Guide, but...
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, and they do a lot of at the moment, or I've been doing a little bit of as well, like doing radio on location where you've got just portable kit and so you can make things sound really cool by just going through someone's house or like actually doing things instead of just sound effects in studio. This is a derailment, but so one of the most exciting things I got to do at the BBC was the first time I got, they still have radio drama studios.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at Maida Vale, so BBC Maida Vale was where they had like all the best new bands would do their live sessions,
mm-hmm.
and they'd make these weird radio dramas. And so I got to go and make a radio drama, and they have like a dead room with like patio concrete flooring, so you can be outside, and you've got some old tape that you can crunch around, and it sounds like leaves. A set of stairs where it's three different surfaces, so there's carpet, wood, and stone. And it's like, in some ways, it's like, I don't know, like a parody of old-timey radio, but it's still there, and it smells like your granddad's attic.
Sure.
It's just like mothballs and whatever. And they had we did a scene where there was a couple in bed, and they have a fold-out bed. And I was like, well, let's get into bed, guys.
That's amazing.
So they had all that, and then when you'd go, and it's sort of, I guess it's like an Art Deco era building. I think it was an ice rink, and then it was like an air raid shelter, and mm-hmm. then it was, the BBC's owned it ever since. And so you kind of feel like you're on a military base. So I guess like the studios that you get out, like a film studio out here, it's that sort of vibe. But and there's a canteen, and so you'll be in the canteen with like a bunch of elderly, revered British comedy actors.
Yeah.
And then there'll be some hip new band at the other table, and you're just in residence together for a week while you do your thing and they do their thing.
Wow.
So that was pretty great. And working with engineers that had worked on Hitchhikers and things like that as mm-hmm. well, when you're like 20 something mm-hmm. going, how do I do this? And they go, well, on Hitchhikers, we used to, like, tell me more.
After childhood, what happened then?
Adolescence.
And what was that like?
Like childhood, but with more pubic hair.
Please.
I got you there.
Yes. Certainly did. Now...
You are.
Please. Now, Lord Morgan, please. People are listening. Now, in Oxford, in the 1930s, you went up to Oxford to study the classics. And it was there you met W.H. Auden,
Poof.
Stephen Spender, Cecil Day Lewis.
Big puff.
Now, you didn't like them, did you?
Nancy boy, communist puff to perks. Little puffy perks pouncing around.
Right, okay. So you didn't like them?
You...
Please don't say that again, please.
If you don't want me to say it again, I won't say it again. I give you my word.
Are you a man of your word?
Nope.
Right. You've been very outspoken. You're in favour of hanging.
Only for criminals.
Right, but oddly, more recently, you've been an outspoken defender of pornography. Why?
What a man chooses to do in the privacy of his own attic is his business alone.
Right, but what about the feminist argument that pornography degrades women?
But is it not the case that sex degrades women? If it's any good.
And then the flip side of that is doing like location stuff, which is fun and cheaper.
Yeah, sure.
but you can get good effects.
Right. Well, I mean, but making location stuff sound, it sounds like, feels like a challenge, but I could be wrong. I mean, is it simple?
It's simple. I use good experienced sound engineers,
sure.
And that makes it way simple, because it means that I can concentrate on like directing the scene.
Okay.
When I've had to really cut corners and record it myself, it becomes okay. About just like, how do I make this not sound crappy?
That's the problem I have.
And then recording a bunch of extra like actuality so that you can just layer in extra mm-hmm. sounds to make it sound realistic.
Right.
So I've got a show just starting next week on the BBC that I was back in November taping,
mm-hmm.
and then Josie Long, who's wrote and stars in it, mm-hmm. came out here to record. She'd not written enough words for the final episode, so we had to record a couple of extra scenes, and we did those last week. And I need to go on the metro tomorrow with my portable recorder and record the sound of jumping onto a train as the doors close.
Oh my god, that's so good.
So things like that, but then I think those things really make something sound great. Like having your own recorded sound effects sound way better than the.
Yeah.
I've got a hard drive full of sound effects from like Warner Brothers cartoons.
Sure.
Like everything, and every time you do a new project, you get some other sound library added to it.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdly, for the BBC used to give the sound engineers used to be able to take like a sabbatical of a few weeks mm-hmm. and just go off and record shit somewhere.
Oh my god.
But they'd be way too rigorous, because it'll be like, okay, this is a Ford Cortina driver's side door, clunk. Passenger side door, clunk. And it's just like
the same fucking sound, right?
You just, I mean, you put in your search engine car door and it's giving you this. And
holy,
you're like,
shit.
Really, guys?
Oh my god.
We need this detail.
There's part of me that would have loved that.
Right.
There is a part of me that would have loved to do that. I'm sorry, we could go on this shit all
day.
Why do you think they picked these two Alan Partridge episodes for this record? Like, what do you think is...
Yeah, it's weird. The Tony Hares one, the bit where he's pitching to the guy that's the TV commissioner,
uh-huh.
that becomes like one of the very best moments in the TV show,
because mm-hmm.
they've got the same guy playing the same TV commissioner.
Okay.
I'm seeing that some of them, they've changed the names, but with him, they kept him the same. And they've just got this scene in the BBC canteen where the first TV series has gone out and Alan's pitching for the second,
mm-hmm.
and Tony just wants to cancel it. And he's not interested in Alan's big new idea. And so Alan's like, give me a minute. Okay. Monkey tennis. And he's just like coming up with his like pun titles for a cat amongst the pear trees. And this guy's just like not interested. And it ends up with Alan Partridge stabbing the cheese board with a fork, holding it in front of this guy's face saying, "Smell my cheese." And then running out of the BBC canteen.
Holy
shit. And it's just so spectacular. So,
oh my god.
Like, I think on the strength of that heritage alone, you would include that episode.
It's so good. This is a problem too, is like, I obviously collect comedy records. I don't do record store day because I'm not a 6 a.m. person on a weekend.
Right.
So now I'm going to have to find somebody in England who's willing to get up that early for me to... I know a couple guys. I bet I could talk a couple in. You know, actually, it makes me think. One of the guys is the... he runs a fan club of a guy who is no longer famous over here, but still has... Phil Silvers still has a following.
Oh, okay.
In England.
That's weird.
Yeah. Well, he's
I didn't realize he wasn't famous over here.
Not really. Barely. He's a reverse Coogan. This is exactly what we're talking about. Like,
right.
It makes me go, Phil Silver, like, he gets played on TV over there still sometimes.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure when I've seen him on TV, but he's definitely someone that I'd be happy to have a box set of and to like rewatch or whatever.
Right. That's the
it's
thing.
Weird. But you get that with stand-ups as well. Like, you get that with current stand-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rich Hall is mm-hmm. is a beloved stand-up in the UK.
Yeah.
He's the guy that Mo from The Simpsons was apparently based on.
Really?
He was in like one season of Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
Basically is unknown in the US.
Right. It's to the point where I probably would recognize him, but I don't know.
And is like huge. Well, you'd recognize him because he looks like Mo from The Simpsons.
Looks like Mo from The Simpsons.
But it's like huge in the UK. And someone was saying Arj Barker from San Francisco.
Yeah.
Like massive in Australia.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
almost unknown in the US.
Yeah, absolutely. I only know him, again, little bits and pieces, but I have heard that he's very big over there. It's very strange to me. Okay, so what I want to do is, but like when we get towards the end, why listen to this record, presuming it sounds, I'll bet it sounds better than this. I'm kind of excited to hear how it sounds.
Right.
Even though I think it's a picture disc, but regardless.
Such a naff, like 90s BBC looking picture disc.
It really
as well.
Is, I know.
But I guess they've just doubled down on the aesthetic.
100% they have, yeah.
Partridge.
So actually, I feel like in this case, we get to specifically say, if you're American, why listen to this? And also, like, I feel like you have the opportunity to pitch Steve Coogan.
Right.
So it's now your responsibility to pitch Steve
That's
Coogan.
Tough.
I know.
Was the... Did you see The Trip?
Yes. I love The
that
Trip.
That was really great.
Yeah, that was good. Did I see the sequel?
And that was the thing that they made it as a TV show
okay.
in the UK and then just shot enough footage and always planned to release it as
did?
A movie. And so then it gets kind of spliced into a movie.
Yeah.
Was it Michael Winterbottom?
Mm-hmm.
So there was that. There's a brilliant bit in the Trip that probably didn't make the movie because mm-hmm. Americans wouldn't understand. But he's just Steve Coogan, who is clearly Alan Partridge was somewhat based on himself,
yeah.
and clearly in the Trip he's leaning into that character mm-hmm. as well. But he's just had this conversation with his younger girlfriend, who's not as into him as she used to be, or
uh-huh.
whatever, and he's feeling a bit low and. His agent's just called saying that he can't get him any auditions in America.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just looking out over this majestic Northern English, like valley and mountain range, and just goes, "Aha!" Like Alan Partridge's catchphrase.
I fucking love it. That's hilarious.
Like, that's how he
I wouldn't have
stokes
it
himself
today.
Up.
No, you know
so
what I mean?
They probably cut it from the film.
Yeah, I don't think it's in there at all. Although it is one of the few things where it's got to be 15 minutes of Michael Caine impressions, right?
Right.
And that whole thing, they do.
Him and Rob Brydon just doing impressions
hilarious.
Of each other is a delight.
Just talking about, no, it's more nasal nose. It's like, it's yeah. 50 years of cigarettes up in his nose.
But that's kind of like the podcasting thing of, like, mm-hmm. what I love about podcasts is listening to funny people just hanging out and palling around.
Yeah.
And this is just... I mean, they could have just done that as a podcast instead of a TV show.
Yeah,
and
that's
film.
True.
Same and it would have been a very satisfying podcast.
Yeah. There, I mean, I feel like it would be more likely over there, though, that we'd find somebody to the level of Steve Coogan doing a pod. Maybe not, though. Our podcast not? Am I? Maybe
no,
I'm mistaken. Just radio.
People aren't able to. Yeah, because people can get paid for radio.
Yeah,
and
sure.
No one in the UK can fund a podcast
apart
from Helen Zaltzman, and that's because she's doing it with Radiotopia.
Yeah. And actually, you know, I should point out, and thank you for pointing me towards Stuart Goldsmith's show. The Comedian's Comedian.
Oh, yeah.
I fucking love that show.
Yeah, that's great.
He's good. Like, his interviews are fucking fun. Did you hear the one with Hari Kondabolu?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
It is really good. I have never heard somebody... It's hilarious because, like, you get to listen to these two perspectives on why American comedians function the way they do, why English... But, like, Hari Kondabolu gives him so much shit... It's basically, why do you guys do Edinburgh at all? Like, he is just giving them so... Because, like, you don't sell your specials. You do an hour of work and you don't sell your... And it's...
Yeah,
it's
Edinburgh's
really,
the greatest thing. It's the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
Americans
yeah.
mostly... Well, one of the main things is that American comics come over. Like, Marc Maron famously mm-hmm. had a terrible time. But
sure.
So many Americans that I've seen come over where they think that they're being invited as guests to a prestigious thing.
Right.
And in fact, it's like a bare-knuckle fist fight mm-hmm. for audiences.
Right.
And they've probably not paid for an extra promoter. They think that they're going to be in like a nice venue and that's going to be taken care of. So no one comes to their show.
Yeah.
No one knows their show's on. It's probably in a venue that's like the back room of a pub, like a good 4 miles from where the rest of the festival's happening because no one's told them that they need to check that.
Right.
So a bunch of Americans go and have a horrible experience at it, whereas British comics, Edinburgh is the thing you aspire to.
Sure.
Like, first time I went at that, like, 17 years old, and I was mm-hmm. like, right, well,
oh my God.
I'm back every year, and cumulatively over the next 12 years, I spent a year of my life living in Edinburgh.
Jesus.
Because you just go up for the whole month and see like, 8 hours of comedy a day, and then...
Oof.
You're hanging out with all your comedy friends.
Mm-hmm.
The bars are open till 6 a.m. Shows start again at like midday the next day.
Oh my God.
Like it's comedy summer camp, and it's the big thing of like the comedians, particularly like mostly don't get to see each other much because
mm-hmm.
there's three comics on a bill, and they're all touring the country separately.
Right.
Apart from in August when they all come together and they all like show off, like who's got the best comedy chops.
Right. You can't float by on your name at all. It's all 100%, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, increasingly, people are going and just doing stadium gigs in the city.
Okay.
But that's been controversial. But the main thing is that, like, the classic Edinburgh show will be, like, an hour with a narrative through line. Mm-hmm. So it's, you can't just break it down and use it on the circuit the rest of the year.
Right,
because it's beginning, middle, and end.
That's
and
what's a so bit heartbreaking,
40 minutes where you have to break it up because people get restless at 40 minutes, and so you have to do a thing there.
Jesus. That's but I think that was more what Hari Kondabolu was saying. It's like, it is heartbreaking to lose all that.
Yeah.
But it just, that's just the way it's done.
Right.
That's fucking, it breaks my mind. And I don't do stand-up, but that kills
years,
me.
Like, even the most successful people that were, like, selling out, if they were playing in the kind of popular venues, were losing about £7,000 on the month.
Jesus.
Like, selling out every day, because you have to pay for the promotion, and all your agents are screwing you over, and the venues are screwing you over, and there's a lot of people...
Yeah.
A lot of people screwing.
Oh, my God.
But it's magical.
At least
it's
really
like
good.
The most intense comedy experience.
And there's good Indian food in Edinburgh.
Right.
Really good Indian food.
Yeah.
Okay, so... We've gone over why to listen to this. I think we've given Steve Coogan's brilliant. I mean, he's
and Armando Iannucci's brilliant. And this is like some very early Armando Iannucci-ing.
Yeah.
Of like as a producer, I admire so much the way he's like he puts a team together of the most talented people.
Yeah.
And like you can't overlook how big a talent that is to just go, okay, rather than just find one person or just try and shine myself, I'm going to find the six best people at the moment. And like he keeps doing that. He keeps bringing in like the best new writers, Rob and Neil Gibbons, who are writing the new Alan Partridge's, like were writing sketch show things for me back in my BBC radio days. And he found them and he was like, right, you guys.
That's awesome.
Tony Roach, a lot of the people that are now on Veep kind of came through doing his other stuff. So it's just this and it's like there's a big tradition of like the Cambridge Footlights and kind of cliquey Oxford and Cambridge University, which I guess is like you get like the Harvard Lampoon people that there's that famous cliqueyness.
Sure.
But I think Armando's cliqueyness isn't necessarily the Oxford and Cambridge thing. It's going, there's a value in putting a team together and supporting each other. And I think Armando does that really well. And he's like one of the first things that people were like, oh, this guy. And I remember him, he says he got a complaint to the BBC. And it was like, and by the way, what kind of name is Iannucci for someone working at the British Broadcasting Corporation?
Oh, my.
But so that people were starting to take notice, pay attention to Armando Iannucci because of On the Hour and then Alan Partridge.
My God, that's crazy. Okay, I apologize because I don't know when the hell this is going to come out, but is there anything that you should promote right now, and where can people find other stuff you're working on?
If it's still available on the BBC Radio iPlayer, Josie Long's Romance and Adventure is something that I've just been doing, and we taped something with Claudio Doherty doing a fun scene in it the other week, and some of it, you know, listen out for the Los Angeles Metro system on the upcoming series.
Love it.
So there's four episodes of that. That's a new thing. All my podcasts at MaximumFun.org, Pop Rocket, Bullseye, International Waters, Getting Curious with Jonathan Van Ness. If this is coming out in a few weeks' time, we might have announced that we're adding a new podcast called The Beef and Dairy Network, which exists in the UK at the moment. It's by a guy called Benjamin Partridge. Who was a comedy writer at the BBC, and he's made this pretend, well, it's a real podcast, but like a parody of an industry beef and dairy farming podcast.
Awesome.
And it's kind of in an old time radio. It's like I've been in America long enough that I think that just making dramatized radio is old fashioned. it's kind of in that style, but
that's
it's really, really funny. So I would recommend that.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being here. I'm very proud of myself for not saying Andy Partridge at any point because I was afraid of going to. Please listen to this album when it comes out. If you're American and you want to cheat, they're on YouTube. You can find, that's where I had to find them. Like, if there's no way to get them otherwise until that album comes out, and you listen on YouTube, they're brilliant. I will put clips in this. Thank you guys for listening, and as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com. Hi, I'm Jason Klom.
Gazizza, I'm Alan Rickard.
Your last name is Rickard?
And we are the hosts of
Dispatches from Port Awesome, a news radio podcast.
This is Jason again. I host the well-reputed...
Reputed? This is Alan.
Reputed Comedy on Vinyl podcast, as well as some others. Alan, though.
I've been on some podcasts, also I'm an actor, and have been for nigh on several years.
The important part, though, is that while we're close friends, we found a bond when we discovered that we both love the greatest sitcom of the 90s.
Possibly of all time.
I won't refute that. The podcast will go through the entire series, from episode 1 to episode 97.
We'll be talking with other fans of the show, people who worked on the show, and you.
That's right. You can email your questions about the show, and I'm not kidding here, to freakzilla@scopenet.com. That's right. We'll either try to get the answers for you ourselves or direct from the people who put the show together.
It's a dream come true. You can also call and leave a voicemail for us at 646-801-WNYX. If it's relevant or funny or even stupid, as long as it's news radio related, you have a good chance of it getting played on the show. Dispatches from Fort Awesome, a news radio podcast.
All of this talk of aged lunch meat and ghost has made me peckish.
Equally dumb closing quote.
God damn it, Alan.
Sorry. That's in parentheses. I shouldn't have actually said that.
Please subscribe to Dispatches from Fort Awesome on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WNYX News Radio.